Luke 19 and verses 1 to 10. He, that is Jesus, entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry, come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he turned and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled. "He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Over to Luigi.
Thanks, Tom. And I've got on the handout there at the top a question: is London done with Jesus? And in many ways, it's a bit of a silly question, isn't it? Because the answer is obviously yes, right? In some ways, the answer is obviously yes. London done with Jesus? Of course it is. Bible-believing Christians aren't just to be pitied as fools or gawked at as freaks. Those who follow Jesus' teachings, I think increasingly are despised as fundamentalists. Not by everyone, obviously, but in terms of what the mass thinking would be. Despised as fundamentalists. Many would say particularly that a Christian sexual ethic is immoral. It's an evil that needs silencing rather than a worldview that needs embracing. And it's not only just that there's no longer such a thing as objective truth, I think it's also widely accepted, taken for granted, that Christian truth is illegitimate. Most, I think, don't feel, particularly those who are of a younger generation, if they're millennials, I mean, let alone Gen Z, most don't feel they need to investigate the claims of Jesus any more than they do those of the boogie monster. Because I think your colleague's base assumption is that the Bible is nonsense. It's just what we all already know. And I think increasingly, when we mention our Christian beliefs, as a Christian, I think sometimes I mention my Christian beliefs and people change the topic of conversation. I think, haha, they don't want to talk about these deeper things. And increasingly, I think I'm realizing they're changing the conversation, not because they're worried that they haven't got answers to my questions, but more because they're embarrassed for me. They don't want to put me in a tricky situation, make it awkward for me as I have to explain why I believe what I believe. They don't want to be reminded, if they like me, that I'm one of those awful fundamentalists. And so, of course, we find it tough to really believe that it is worth talking about Jesus to those people. Praying for many of my friends to become Christians feels as silly as praying for world peace. Rather than looking for Jesus, our culture seems to be decidedly walking away from him. Not just spiritually lost, as it were, but happily telling him to get lost. Or my mates would happily tell me to get lost as I talk about Jesus. Is London done with Jesus? Well, London may want to be done with Jesus. Culturally, we may be at that point. But if you look again at verse 10, at what Jesus says about himself, Jesus says, "For the Son of Man," that's him, "came to seek and save the lost." If you want to know what lies at the heart of our passage today, the truth that lies at the heart of our hope for our family, friends, or colleagues, it's found in that simple yet revolutionary truth in that verse. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. It's what he came to do. So London may be done with Jesus, but he isn't done with London. In fact, he says the very reason he came to earth 2,000 years ago, the very reason he put Christians in offices all over this city, is because Jesus is searching for the lost. Jesus is searching for the lost. I saw this really purposefully trash advert for a film called Machete Kills. Machete Kills, it's what he does. Jesus is searching for the lost, it's what he does. Look at those first two verses of chapter 19 with me again. He, Jesus, entered Jericho and was passing through. And there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. I don't know how much you already know about the biblical understanding of tax collectors. In first century Israel, Jewish tax collectors were among the most hated of people by the morally upright, because their job was to collect taxes from their fellow Jewish people and to give them to their oppressors, the Romans. Problem wasn't only, though, that they were collaborators with the enemy of Judah. Worse still, the Romans allowed a system that meant that these Jewish tax collectors gained their own money by fleecing their own population more than the Romans demanded. They got rich by demanding even more than the Romans demanded off of them. And that's why Zacchaeus has to say in verse 8, if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. I mean, that's a lot of fourfolds, because defrauding's the guy's job. I was thinking tax collectors, they were hated in the first century, a bit like bankers were by the Daily Mail in 2009, or like Wonga.com was by the Church of England in 2018. And Zacchaeus, he's not just any tax collector, is he? Look again at verse 2. Verse 2, he's a chief tax collector, and he's rich. But it's also really important to get that the problem here isn't just that Zacchaeus is a scumbag. You know, he's not just one of the ones the Daily Mail say absolute scumbag. It's also that as a result of this, or this is a sign of, maybe a better way of saying, the fact that he couldn't be any further away from God. So if you look at verse 7, what happens when Jesus goes to his house? Verse 7, when they all saw it, they all grumbled. Everyone grumbles. They all know, right? They all know this is nuts because he's gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Zacchaeus is the archetypal, the chief sinner. And he's made buckets from being a sinner. He's not just an enemy of the people of Israel, he's an enemy of their God. And look, it's not that he's got no mates, right? Because money attracts a crowd. Always has, always will. It's just that we see in the Gospels that the tax collectors' mates, well, they're the other great sinners of that society. So the tax collectors, they're excluded from the religious feasts, they're despised by the religious people and the religious leaders. I was thinking, Zacchaeus, he's the guy in the office who's effortlessly capable, ruthlessly ambitious, regularly dishonest in his determination to get ahead. He would throw you under the bus at any given moment, but he still makes joke and you cannot resist laughing at his charm. And it's not just that he's irreligious, it's that he's actively anti-religious. He's the guy who, I don't know, once overheard you saying that you're a Christian in the pub after work, and uncharacteristically for him, he butts in and says, don't tell me you seriously believe in all that effing nonsense. You can feel the rage as he talks about this stuff. He's the one that you now make sure is out of earshot, or out of the office when you invite the others to the carol service. He's the one, I don't know if you understand what I mean by this, but he's the one who, it's not just that he doesn't like Christian things, but you know that in some senses, if you talk about Christian things with him, you're in some senses attacking his very identity, because his whole life is based upon a framework, a foundation that is thoroughly against the God of the Old Testament. That's Zacchaeus, traitor to the people of God. Only look how crazy verse 3 is in the light of all that. Verse 3, and he was seeking to see who Jesus was. And I think you're supposed to think, what? Or if you've been reading Luke up until now, you're thinking, come on, Luke, stop telling us about people Jesus wants to save. Not him too. Jesus is passing through Jericho, and Zacchaeus is the absolute last person you'd expect to want to know more about him. He's the kind of person you wouldn't give him the flyer to come and see Jesus as he came through. And yet, unbelievably, something piques his interest. We don't know what, but something does. Only problem is, in verse 3, he's the kind of guy that loves a Chelsea boot because it gives him an extra few inches, and so he can't see Jesus through the crowd. But remarkably, he's so keen to see Jesus that verse 4, he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see Jesus, for he was about to pass that way. I don't know, maybe you feel a bit like Zacchaeus here today. I did the first time I was amongst a group of Christians. I'm not referring to feeling like Zacchaeus in my basketball prospects. I'm actually quite tall for an Englishman. But rather, I don't know, if you found yourself walking to this building or logging on the sly and you are interested in this Jesus guy, but you're also the last person that any of your mates would expect to be interested in this Jesus guy. I don't know if you're here today and you're thinking, what am I doing here? Or mainly you're thinking, God, I don't know if you're here, but please would I not bump into any of my colleagues as I walk back out this room? If so, that is what Zacchaeus is like. It is so unlike Zacchaeus to be interested in God's stuff, and yet here he is up the tree. And I'm thinking, until verse 4, it looks like Zacchaeus is the one searching for Jesus, right? It looks like he's the one doing the searching. But from verse 5, all of that gets flipped on his head. Jesus is really searching for the lost. Verse 5. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. In verse 1, it seemed relatively random that Jesus entered Jericho and headed across the city. In verse 5, we realize that he was always heading directly for a particular sycamore tree, where he'd find a particular individual for whom he'd come. Zacchaeus isn't the one looking for Jesus. I mean, he does want to catch a look at Jesus, but Jesus is the one who's come looking for him. Notice, I think it's really fascinating. We're not told that Zacchaeus makes a noise, doesn't shout out. There's a huge crowd thronging. But Jesus already knows there's someone up the tree, so he looks up. Notice he knows his name. I mean, that's the really scary thing if you're Zacchaeus, isn't it? Who told you my name? Notice that he says he came today to stay at Zacchaeus' house. In a culture where staying at someone's house meant deep intimacy relationally, full acceptance. Notice that Jesus doesn't even say it's up for debate. No, he must stay. He's determined to save Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus isn't at all seeking this level of interaction. He just wants to catch a good glimpse of the miracle healer that everyone's talking about. But Jesus has come to this place on this date to find the precise person he's after and save them. And then he says why in verse 10. He says, because he's come to seek and save the lost. And Luke's included this passage because he wants us to marvel at who it is in all of Jericho that Jesus has come for. Genuine question, but please don't give a shout-out answer. That's too awkward for us as Brits. But genuine question, and really awkward if they're here or listening in on the sly, but who would you rank as the most likely to become a Christian in your workplace? Most likely. And who is the least likely? Maybe you're the least likely. Jesus came for Zacchaeus. Because he says he's come to seek and save what was lost. That's what he's come to do. Who knows will be next? Who knows when? Who knows if it will be a conversation with you, their best mate, or the result of a conversation with some random person they're trying to hit on at a party? The only thing that is certain is that the King of the universe says he is looking for, he is searching diligently in his world, in this country, in this city, for individuals he already knows by name. And when he finds them, he must stop by them, because he's searching for the lost. And look, if I just look around with my eyes at 21st century London, it is so tough to believe that that's true. It is so tough to believe that Jesus is about that work in a world where Christians are not just fools or freaks, but actually increasingly dangerous fundamentalists. But that is why Luke records this for us. He gives us the real life example of Zacchaeus, and as though that isn't enough, he gives us the very words of Jesus explaining what he has just done and what that means about why he's come. I've come to seek and save what was lost. And when we stop to think about it, isn't that pursuit, that seeking, that finding, isn't that the very testimony of those of us here who would say that we are followers of Jesus? I was thinking for me personally, he had me born in South London, just south of Brixton. He got me expelled from one school so that I would go to another, and he had me choose history of one of my GCSEs because I wanted to do as little work as possible. And then he gave me David Wicks as a teacher, who had become a Christian himself 2 years before, and thought, you know what, I'm going to risk my job by just talking about Jesus for the last few minutes of every lesson, who then invited me to those Bible studies that they used to do, who then invited me to that talk that was put on for people who weren't yet Christians, so that in April 2004, Jesus might finally say, "Luigi, today I have to stop at your house." I probably would have called me Louis back then because I was embarrassed of my name. But Luigi, today I have to stop at your house. And he gave some of you Christian parents so that he might say, "Today, I've got to stop at your house." For others of you, he placed that Christian in your class or your corridor as a fresher or your hockey team, that really annoying one that wouldn't stop talking about Jesus, wouldn't leave you alone. Some of you, he's brought here today despite yourself because he is seeking and saving the lost. Most of us, if we've been Christians for any amount of time, would have tried to get away from Jesus. And he will not let us go, because he is searching for the lost. And for me this week, at least, that has really encouraged me to pray more often for my mates, for my peers who are not yet Christians. It encourages me to speak about him in the hope that others might find themselves equally strangely intrigued. Even those who make jokes about, you know, how, "Oh, if I ever walked into a church, I'd burn up immediately." Maybe especially them, because Jesus has come for people like them, like me. We don't need to believe the lie that London is too far gone for Jesus. Very easy to believe. Jesus says it's nonsense. It may be done with him, but he's not done with it. And I don't know if you're anything like me, but one of the reasons I felt like I couldn't become a Christian, one of the reasons why I presume others are too far gone, it's because their lives often look so fundamentally opposed to a Christian ethic. I think too much would have to change in their lives. I make the mistake of thinking that change would have to come before they ever became a Christian or considered the Christian claims. But gloriously, and I promised briefly in the second point, Jesus changes those he finds. He changes those he finds. Despite the beauty of verse 5, Luke doesn't end the episode there. He wants us to see what happened next, what changed in Zacchaeus after being called by Jesus. So in verse 7, the people grumble, don't they? They presume that Jesus doesn't care about how immoral Zacchaeus' life has been. But that's not true at all. They just haven't understood that Jesus changes people having found them. So in verse 8, the guy's great life aim up until that point was to be rich. And now he says, "Behold, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor." Zacchaeus' life completely turned upside down. What's happened? Verse 9, Jesus says the cause of the change. Jesus says it's because today salvation has entered this house. When did salvation enter Zacchaeus' house? Well, it's when Jesus walked through the door. Jesus came in, he found him, and he changes those he finds. He says this radical difference in Zacchaeus, it's the sign or the fruit of the fact that Jesus has found him, has saved him. And look, Zacchaeus is being used as the ultimate example here, right? He's the pin-up boy sinner, nothing to do with God, who then becomes the pin-up boy, ardent fan of Jesus. And change isn't always that fast by any stretch of the imagination, but Jesus does change those he finds. Some of my affections are so utterly different from 18 years ago. Ambitions, fears, motivations, thoughts, words, actions. Jesus changes those he finds. So often we presume that people are too far gone because their lives look thoroughly unchristian. You know, they're so messy, or they're too deep-seated in their ways. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. But we don't realize that Jesus is looking for the lost. And then when he finds them, after he finds them, not before, the Holy Spirit makes his home in them and gets to work on changing them. Jesus is so much happier than we think he is to get knee-deep involved in the muckiness of people's lives, their messy lives, to meet them in their lostness and found them. I would not be here standing talking about Jesus today if he waited for me to get out of the muck before he met me. I was knee-deep in it and he waded in. He's not daunted by it or put off. He's not impressed by middle-class niceties. He's not wowed by the veneer of having life sorted. That's just not the cachet within which he works. He changes those he has already found. And did we spot how Zacchaeus feels? Do you see how he feels? In a context where Zacchaeus gives up everything he has built his life around, he immediately says, half of my wealth gone. How does he feel? Verse 6. He hurried down. He hurried and came down and received him joyfully. Zacchaeus has stuck two fingers up at God for his entire life. Zacchaeus was looked at with disgust by all of the religious people he met. And yet one day Jesus came along, and standing before him, he said God was by no means done with him. He said, I've got to come to your house tonight. I've come to seek and save people like you. I've come for you. I want to spend the night eating and drinking at your house. And so even though he knew that accepting Jesus into his life would cost him everything he was living for, his heart melted and he was filled with joy that God would be interested in a scumbag like him, in a scumbag like me. Jesus is searching for the lost and he says he changes those he finds. Shall I lead us in a prayer? Oh, Lord Jesus, it is so difficult to believe that that's the reality because it's so different from the lens through which we judge people and how likely or not they are to become Christians. Thank you so much that there is absolutely no one, however much they want to resist against you, that is beyond the pale. Thank you that you've been seeking and saving the lost for millennia. Thank you that for many of us here, you've already done that work of seeking and saving us. Thank you for the way in which you are changing us. Please, in your kindness, would you even today be about that work, sifting through these offices in London? In your immense kindness, would you give us opportunities to be used to that end? And we do look forward to that last day when we'll just see all of the countless numbers of people that you have sought and saved who are lost. Thank you for who you are. Amen.